most recent gold prospecting and mining techniques. We can discuss such topics as how you can become rich and famous by making a fabulously rich gold discovery, or perhaps the role of education in the Alaskan mining industry. And of course, we will have special guests to discuss different mining-related topics. Some will discuss where the Earth's hidden treasures might be found, while others will tell us the rules we must follow to extract them. But most of all, my friends, give us a call if you have a question or care to make a comment on mining in Alaska. We would especially like to hear from some of you early pioneers. I know many of you must have some fascinating stories that perhaps you wouldn't mind sharing with us. So if you just want to chat for a few minutes or want to share one of your more favorite frontier experiences, give us a call. The number is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. Let's talk gold mining through the years along Alaska Gold Trails. Well, we've got a real special show for you today, and we got something coming up at Christmas time that's sure to be special to you. We'd like to invite you to join KFAR here for a special Alaska Gold Trails Christmas celebration. On Christmas Day, we'll be presenting a special two-hour Alaska Gold Trails program from 1 to 3 p.m. Join us as we feature many of Alaska's pioneers highlighting tales from their most memorable Christmases. None are traditional. All are exciting, and some are unbelievable. And if you have an interesting Christmas tale to share, give us a call on Christmas Day, and you'll receive a special gift. That's the Alaska Gold Trails Christmas Celebration on Christmas Day from 1 to 3 p.m. And for your friends in the outlying bush areas, if you have a special memorable Christmas you'd like to share with us, jot it down and send it to us here at KFAR. That's Alaska Gold Trails, KFAR Radio, P.O. Box 910, Fairbanks, Alaska, 99701. Let me give you that address one more time. That's Alaska Gold Trails, KFAR Radio, P.O. Box 910, Fairbanks, Alaska, 99707, and you'll receive a special Christmas gift from us here. Remember, folks, that's Alaska Gold Trails' special Christmas celebration on Christmas Day from 1 to 3 p.m. As I said earlier, we've got a real special show for you today. In just a few minutes, we're going to meet today's guest, Paul Borelka, who, as many of you know, is one of Alaska's most colorful and interesting pioneer prospectors and miners. But before launching into the thick of the program, let's do what we do to give away dinner for two at Laura's Gold Strike Cafe. And that's, as you know, our Frontier History Quiz. The first person to call us at 479-TALK, that's 479-8255, and give us the correct answer to our question, will win a $20 dinner for two at Laura's Cafe, Gold Strike Cafe, located across from the Daily News Miner. Now, listen to this, folks. From 1902, when Felix Pedro first discovered gold in the Fairbanks area, until 1914, the early placer miners extracted $70 million worth of gold from shafts dropped through the frozen ground to bedrock. For a $20 dinner for two at Laura's Gold Strike, tell us the name of this style of placer mining. My goodness, we have a phone call already. Hello, you're on the air.
Something like that.
Hello.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Yes, are the shafts called adits?
No, that's close, but that's not the answer we're looking for. We're looking for the type of mining that was used to extract the gold from the frozen gravels in the early days here in the Fairbanks area. Thank you. Hello, you're on the air.
Drift mining.
Yes, sir, exactly correct. Drift mining is the answer. And what's your name, sir?
Bill Ristow.
Bill, well, thank you for the call, Bill. And, of course, you know what you've won. You've won a $20 dinner for two at Laura's Gold Strike Cafe. And you know where that's at, right across from the Daily News Miner.
Yes.
Okay, Bill, thanks a lot for the call. And you can pick up that ticket for that dinner here at KFAR Studio at Washington Plaza anytime after 3 o'clock today. How's that?
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Bill. Well, we've got our winner for the Frontier History Quiz today. And the winner, of course, Bill Risto. And that completes the quiz for the day. Let's take a look at Import Auto Body at 2201 Judd Street, right next door to the Jade Shop. Tim Schroeder, ready to serve you with free estimates, excellence in bodywork, and of course insurance estimates. Import Auto Body uses the very finest materials available. Also, they have a unibody frame straightening and alignment machine. Using this latest technology, they simply put your car on the machine, then realign the frame to factory specifications. And keep in mind, folks, this machine is not limited to imports. Factory replacements, you bet they've got them. Window replacements, they've got those too. Restoration, the very finest in Fairbanks. They feature famous, genuine Saab parts, and they have a urethane primer that will make your car like new. Find a deal on a used import that only needs minor repairs, and take it over to Import Auto Body. They can fix it up for you. Import Auto Body, specializing quality auto body repairs. They're located at 2201 Judd Street, right next to the Jade Shop. Give Tim a call at 451-8456. That's 451-8456. Oh, and Larson's Jewelry. When you think about jewelry, you think about quality. And when you want quality, you think about Larson's Jewelry. Located at 4th and Noble. That's where you can rely on quality and originality, whether you're looking for a wedding rings and bands or a special piece for that special person. Larson's Jewelry has been in business since 1946, and they offer full jewelry and goldsmithing service. That means they can take raw gold and create rings, bracelets, necklaces, and earrings right on the spot and in a design of your choice. Larson's can also add diamonds, rubies, sapphires, or other gemstones from their large inventory to your new or existing jewelry piece. They can repair and rebuild jewelry, including shanks, loops, and chains. It's a comfortable feeling when you know you are getting quality as well as value. At Larson's Jewelry, they have a fine selection of silver sets and crystals that's sure, with time, to become a family treasure. And for a special gift that will be long remembered, they now have a new glass etching and engraving service. But listen, folks, Larson's is more than a jewelry store. Their wide selection of beautiful trophies and plaques can be personalized to commemorate a special occasion or achievement. And for your safety and peace of mind, Larson's also has a complete locksmithing service, including installation and servicing of all types of locks and safes. For anything you need, they have it on hand. Just remember, Larson's can. Located at 4th and Noble, open 9 to 6 weekdays and 9 to 5 Saturdays. Visit today or give them a call at 456-4141. That's 456-4141. And now we're here with Paul Borelka. And how are you today, Paul?
Oh, fine. I'm enjoying the weather, enjoying the season, enjoying the company, you know, so telling war stories one to another, so I'm really having a good time.
Paul, you've been in Alaska for a great many years, and just what was it? See, you were from Ohio, weren't you?
Yes, right.
And what brought you to Alaska, Paul?
Well, during the Depression years, Alaska was about the only state that had a viable economy, and of course everybody wanted to go to Alaska, and there was a program to settle people from the lower 48s to the Manitouska Valley. In fact, it was called the Manitouska Settlement Program, and at that time my dad couldn't find a job. He was out of work, and he had the family, and we didn't, there wasn't any opportunities for a job. And of course, he kept talking about the opportunity that would be here in Alaska. So we were, you know, planning at that time to come to Alaska. But unfortunately, and I say that because I think I missed a lot by not coming, he found a job and we stayed in Ohio. So, and then when the war came along, of course, we just looked to the point in time that we would go into the military because everybody was getting drafted, and Well, let's face it, there was war work to be done, and we got involved in that. That is, the whole family, because even the kids worked in defense plants at the time, and that's something that a lot of people don't realize. But I felt that after the war was over, that I would make a break to go to Alaska. But unfortunately, the Korean War came along, and all my plans and in 1949 ended because of the war. So I really didn't get an opportunity to come and see Alaska until after my discharge from the military in 1954.
And where did you go, Paul?
Well, at that particular time, there was a big rush for uranium. And so my brother and I joined the uranium rush. He just got out of the service, too. He was in the Navy. In fact, actually, his Navy experiences were a lot part of that was here, right here in Alaska. So he pretty well knew a lot of the old-time prospectors, and he heard a lot of the Alaskan stories about all these areas of high mineralization. So, but the one area that we concentrated was in Canada. The Canadian North. So we stampeded right off into the Canadian North. And of course, from that time on, you meet the same prospectors in all these areas in the world. I mean, whether from Alaska or Canada or Australia, but whenever a stampede takes place, you'll invariably find the what we call the crew. And so it's really surprising that you'll end up in one part of the world and here you'll meet somebody from that you've met in other gold rushes or uranium rushes or diamond rushes and it's a sort of like a bunch of adventurers, I think, rather than being realistic and trying to make money. I think those guys just do it for an excuse to do it.
Paul, did you do it for an excuse to do it? Were you involved in a number of gold rushes through time?
I sort of have to confess, I was always motivated by finding a big treasure trove, I mean, I was always interested in looking for these lost gold mines. And of course, my experience in here in Alaska is for that one purpose. One of the things I always wanted to find was the lost treasure of Devil's Mountain around the northern Kotzebue area, or, Nome and Kotzebue. In fact, it was one of the areas that I wanted to settle into and, build or establish a base of operation from, because not only that, at the time there was fishing, there was a lot of attractions there, but primarily mining, But I figured if I could make a living mining and homesteading, then I could spend my time looking for the treasure of Devil's Mountain,
Well, Paul, I'd like to talk about some of these interesting gold rushes that you participated in just a few minutes, right after this little message. Robert and Charlene and James Johnson own and operate a family business here in Fairbanks called Arctic Springs at 285 Alta Way. They started manufacturing leaf springs, U-bolts, for all sizes and types of vehicles and heavy equipment several years ago. Because of their interest in developing a leaf spring manufacturing plant in Fairbanks, they became one of the first businesses to be awarded the use of the Made in Alaska logo for businesses using Alaskan products and labor. To give you an example of what they can do over there on Alta Way in their 6,000 square foot manufacturing plant, just listen to this. They manufacture and recondition springs for snow machines, cars, trucks, heavy equipment, and get this, folks, even aircraft. Springs can be re-arched and U-bolts cold bent to your specifications, and they can raise and lower your vehicle. I like that. Arctic Springs handles both standard and custom-made coil springs. Just look at what they stock. A complete line of steel, brass, rubber, and Teflon bushings. Torsion bar axles for auto trailers, snow machine trailers, and weasels. Finally, folks, they build trailers to your specifications. So bring in your blueprints or sketch. In addition, they have two huge 30-inch by 8-foot heat treatment ovens, which can accommodate just about any material that needs heat treating. That's Bob, Charlene, and James Johnson. And ask the folks over there just what special service they have for placer miners. That's Arctic Springs, 285 Alta Way. Give them a call at 451-8612. Once again, the number is 451-8612. And it's bonanza time. Robbie at Tip Top Chevrolet says all 1987 trucks must go. They are having a giant year-end truck sale. For power, performance, and comfort, you can't beat a Chevrolet truck. The 6-year, 60,000-mile limited warranty is standard. Come in, look them over, take a test drive. No reasonable offer will be refused. Tip Top Chevrolet has what you want, whether gas or diesel, 2 or 4-wheel drive, small, comfortable, and sporty, or full-size work truck. Robbie is ready to deal. For the best selection and the best prices, stop in today at Tip Top Chevrolet, 1916 South Cushman. Listen to the components on these sales models. The S10 Blazers have a powerful 2.8-liter V6 with electronic fuel injection, a smooth ride with fully independent front suspension standard. Excellent visibility. Bucket seats in front are standard on the S10s. Handsome styling with comfort and convenience. All units in stock have 4-wheel drive. And on the S10 pickups, they have heavy-duty construction, sizes to fit your needs, heavy-duty payload package, fully independent front suspension. Hot wax coating on the entire frame helps fight effects of road salt and dirt. On the full-size pickups, electronic fuel injection is now standard, and the Vortec V6 engine, one of the most powerful standard engines in a half-ton pickup. Fleet side or step side boxes available, crew cab or bonus cab available, and of course, your choice, gas or diesel power. That's Tip Top Chevrolet, 1916 Cushman Street, phone 452-8211. And don't forget Robbie's special little safety tip, buckle up with Tip Top Chevrolet. And we're here on KFAR Radio, Alaska Gold Trails, and our guest today is Paul Barocca. And if you have a question for Paul, the number is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. And Paul, I think we have a call on the line. Let's see what we've got here. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, I was wondering if your guest could perhaps tell us a story about the treasure at Devil's Mountain. I never heard about that, and I'll hang up and listen if I could.
Okay, and thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Well, if you go back into Alaska history, even at the time that the Russians owned Alaska, there was a major gold rush to northern Alaska. In fact, the location of gold on the beaches of Nome was that specific area, but there were other areas in there. In fact, the Americans made one of the biggest gold rush in the history of the world that you don't even hear about, and that was in Novi Zemlya, which is in just off the coast of Siberia there. And the Americans that coming up from, in fact, at that time it was going on, it was the time of the California gold rush. And those that sort of came up with the sealing ships into northern Alaskan waters and the whaling ships would stop by the beaches at Novi Zemlya and pan the gold and make the, shall we say, their pension funds, you know, because it was an awful rich gold deposit on the beaches at Novi Zemlya. But on the way up, there was these coaling stations along the coast that the ships would coal. And the one of the members evidently got real friendly with the natives and talking with the Eskimos at that time, and showed him some of the gold samples that he found on the beaches of Novi Zemlya. Asked the Eskimo if there was anything like that around, and he says, "Oh, sure, there's a whole lake full of that kind of metal, you know, off the coast of Kotzebue, inland." And of course, that attracted his attention, and the fellows spent a lot of time looking, but the fellow that really found, I shouldn't say found, because the Eskimos knew exactly where it was, and they would go back into this area and enter into this this lake that's inside of a mountain. And they would bring out the gold, and they would make different bracelets and all types of jewelry, because, you know, after all, the Alaskan Eskimo are some of the best artists in that type of media, you know, the ivory and gold and so on and so forth, although you don't see the gold artifacts now. But back then, they were very much versed in that, and they used it as a trade item. But this Russian that became very friendly with him. In fact, he was the one that had a store on Novi Zhemla. And the American miners put him in business because they didn't have anybody to facilitate the business of business, because they were too busy mining gold. They didn't want to fool around and run a general store or a trading store and bring in the supplies. So they had this fellow set up in business doing that. Well, in his travels, he got to know all the settlements, Eskimo settlements, and, of course, all the stories. Well, the whole thing was that the Eskimos showed him this deposit. And it's really unique, because he needed some money to buy a ship, and he told his needs to the Eskimos. And he told them that he needed to bring the trade goods for their use, too. But he needed a ship, because he couldn't ship his goods. Everybody that was coming up on the ships were coming up on sailing boats to hunt whales or on the steamships for whales or seal hunting, and there wasn't any ships available for trading. So the Eskimo says, well, how much gold do you need to buy a ship? So he told him, he's a very substantial amount, which would have floored the average person. But they considered it nonchalant, and he was so amazed that he asked them, he said, well, yeah, let's get the money, and I'll buy a ship, and I'll start trading for you guys, too. So they led him to the deposit, and it's sort of unique, because it's a hole, it's a crater hole, and you have to crawl into it. And then there's a lake there in the bottom, and it's interesting because the mineralization around there, you have little pebbles that if you take a pebble and you hit it with a hammer, it'll explode. So you could see that this formation was the result of volcanic activity at very depths of the earth, that this mineral hardened and came up, but it still contained that pressure. In fact, the Eskimos used those gemstones in their celebrations. They would hit one of these little pebbles and it would explode. And of course, to a lot of the early miners, that was an indicator to gold deposits. So even I imagine that he must have heard about that before, because he was versed in all the legends and folklore and all the ceremonies of the Eskimos. In fact, he even knew the language, because otherwise he wouldn't have been able to set up the trading post. But that's what he did. He mined that gold, and he promised them that he'd never reveal it. And, of course, he always had that in the back of his mind, that if he ever went belly under, that he would go back. So it was like money in the bank, and he honored the secrecy that they imposed on him. And to this day, though, all people ever hear about it is it as a legend. And they don't hear any of the facts or the location. And, of course, I always thought it was interesting and wanted to follow through to find it.
And that's the story. Is that right, Paul?
Well, there's a lot more to that story. It's.
I think our listener was satisfied with that rendition, huh? I'd never heard of that story before. Did you seek that deposit?
Yeah, we spent a little bit of time looking in that area, but the only trouble is it takes so much money that I had to leave to other areas to make a living. And, of course, I still never stopped looking for these lost gold mines. One of these days I'd like to go back, but I understand now that it would be located in one of the reserves, so you would have to have permission from the natives. Mm-hmm. But you know what's interesting? I turned on the radio one time, and I heard a story from KJNP, North Pole, and it was a children's story. And it talked about these people that were trying to get some money to set up some type of, a business or a foundation to educate shall we say, natives. And this native chief evidently leads them to the deposit of gold at Devil's Mountain. So I was so shocked when I heard that, because I didn't think too many people knew or followed through these legends or stories, and here it was right out in the air telling about the Indian chief, I mean the Eskimo chief, showing the people the gold, and that they could have the gold, and they took the money, and they, of course, they were able to do what they needed to do, you know. So I thought it was, well, unique.
Well, thank you, Paul, and we want to get back to a few more of your stories about prospecting and searches for lost treasures here in Alaska right after this announcement. B&L Pawn Shop at the corner of Gaffney and Cushman is the most unpredictable variety store in Fairbanks. Now, folks, that's an understatement. It's more like having a giant garage sale in one room. One-stop shopping will get you everything. Just to give you an idea, let me list some of the items that they have over there at B&L Pawn. Jewelry, clocks, stereos, headphones, guns, scopes, winches, propane bottles, tools, hats, musical instruments, cameras, TVs, radios, typewriters, and the list goes on and on and on. In fact, you can get anything at B&L Pawn. B&L traditionally has offered tremendous savings, but in addition, if you tell Killer you heard it on KFAR, she'll even sweeten the deal. And if you tell her you heard it from Jim on Alaska Gold Trails, she'll even sweeten it more. If your money is a little tight, they'll be happy to help you out. Bring in anything you feel is of value or use, and the folks at B&L will loan you the money to get through to better days. Or if you sell items on consignment, they'll work with you on that too. So if you're looking for anything from snowshoes to diamond rings, see the folks at B&L Pawn, 605 Gaffney. Jim, Bruce, and of course Killer will be happy to deal. Killer never says no. They'll sell anything but the chandelier, and only then because it's attached. However, ask Killer, you never know. That's B&L Pawn, corner of Gaffney and Cushman. Their number is 452-6491. They're open 9 to 7 Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 on Saturday, and 12 to 5 on Sunday. And remember, tell Killer you heard it here on Alaska Gold Trails, and she'll sweeten the deal. Whether it's an auto, light truck, motorhome, or big rig, for the best service in town, it's Gabe's Truck and Auto Repair. And that's not just my opinion, folks. Last year, the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce gave Gabe's Truck and Auto their prestigious Raving About Fairbanks Award for providing the best vehicle service in Fairbanks. Gabe's has two large shops and eight mechanics on hand to serve you. With that much attention, you know you'll get fast, courteous service and have your vehicle back in a hurry. In addition to engine and general vehicle maintenance, Gabe's can also repair automatic transmissions, realign front ends, and repair mountain balance tires. New and rebuilt engines come with a 12-month or 12-mile warranty, 12,000-mile warranty. As you can see, Gabe's is a one-stop service center. And if you need an IM inspection, get this, folks. Gabe's has a no-pass, no-pay policy. That's right. If you don't pass, you don't pay at Gabe's. Gabe's also has a special deal for you folks who are getting your vehicle ready for winter. If you get an oil change, filter, lube, or tune-up at Gabe's, you'll also get a free winterization inspection. This 30-minute inspection covers such items as heater, antifreeze, check gearboxes, inspect fan belts, battery, and all fluid levels in your vehicle. And don't forget Gabe's towing service. He has three wreckers available 24 hours a day and can handle any size rig. Getting a tow is as easy as calling 456-6156. With this icy weather, you might want to write that number down and put it in your glove box. The number again is 456-6156. You can turn your rag into a ride at Gabe's Truck and Auto, located off Van Horn Road near Metro Field, or give them a call. The number once again is 456-6156. Well, Paul, you had quite an experience up there in the North Country. Do you have another exciting adventure that you might have participated in? How about the Birdman? Do you have any comments on the Birdman? I understand that one time you got the flu up on the John River and you had carrying a flask of alcoholic beverage for medicinal purposes. tell us that story. I recall you commenting on that a time or two in the past.
Well, Of course, at that particular time, I was on the trail of another gold mine. The Eskimos used to come across the pass from Manitouwik Pass into what it today is the gates of the Arctic National Park. But of course, that is one of the real highly mineralized areas in that area. And there was a fellow here in town that was quite a character. I mean, we always considered him one of the bigger characters in Alaska, and his name was Joe Bellis, Bailey. Of course, most people know him as Grover Bayliss. And he was one of the fellows here that spent most of his life looking for these lost legends and lost mines, and he was always trying to promote something. I mean, that of some new mineral discovery or a chance to make or participate in a mineral discovery. In fact, he was one of the most interesting people I've ever met because he had a photographic mind, and he could give you dates and times and locations that was just absolutely amazing. But a lot of people didn't take him serious because of the fact he was always promoting, and he had the habit of not trying to do too much work. In fact, my understanding is he tried to get as much work done as little as possible, if you know what I mean. But Joe was always talking about an area that in that area that had a slab of gold. But if you remember, at that time I was always looking for the lost gold mine of that area, but I always thought the one vein system or the main mother lode was in the Hammond River, because you've got to go back to the early days and when Bettles was running his lodge and the prospectors, in fact, even before the Nome Gold Rush or even to the Gold Rush in Fairbanks or I believe even to the Klondike, the Stampeders went across from Kotzebue to the headwaters of the Koyokuk River into the area that's now Wiseman. And, of course, there were a few that stayed there and prospected and mined. And the thing, more than anything else, there was a fellow that came up in the latter part of that gold rush, and he was a young man, and he'd come up right in the fall, and he'd prospect in the headwaters of the Hammond River over into the gates of the Arctic National Park today, you know, which would be the headwaters of the John River, in that area somewhere. And he'd go out there, and all he'd do was take an axe with him and a little bit of food. And in 2 weeks' time, he'd be back in Wiseman. In fact, it wasn't mine. Well, it was the Bettles Lodge there, which was at Wiseman at that time and not at Bettles. And he would have slabs of gold as much as he could carry. And he would do that every year. Well, the people would line up that were there and wait for him. And then, of course, when he would come, they would try to follow him and try to locate the area that he was getting these slabs of gold. Well, no one has been successful to do it, but just before the Second World War, he made his last trip because he got drafted, and when he left for the States, when he was given his draft notice there in Wiseman to join the Army, he never was heard from. They found his canoe there at the confluence of the Koyokuk and the Yukon River, but they never did find his body or never did find his gold, because of course when he'd go out he'd always carry that slab gold. And of course the treasure seekers like myself and Joe, of course I always considered myself an amateur to Joe. And now remember, at this time I never met him, I just knew about him. So of course at that time, I was looking for that information or outcrops or anything that would show a high mineralization that would be a chance of finding that gold vein. So I went up into that area looking for what I thought would be an indication of where that gold vein was. Because in the 30s, a fellow by the name of Marshall went into this area, and he had an acquaintance by the name of Johnson, and Johnson supposedly found an awful high-grade piece of float And he promoted a lot of money that way. There were people all over the world that wanted to give him that piece of money to prospect to where that float came from. But that's in the story in itself, because I can really go into that one. But anyway, there was a lot of information available that there was some type of a major gold discovery in the area. So I left from Fairbanks, and I took up my food and all of that. And of course, I always, at that particular time, I took a big magnum of, shall we say, whiskey for medicinal purposes with me, because out in that cold, you know, when you're laying in the campfire and everything else like that, it sometimes helps the, shall we say, to give a man a little incentive for the next day's work, you know. But I got sick up there, and a pilot came in to pick me up, because I wanted to move farther up on the John to an area where the where I felt there was a better chance for the mineralization, because the area I was, it was highly mineralized, but not the type of mineralization I was looking for, especially along on the creek areas. So the pilot was wise. He saw that I was sick, and instead of taking me up farther into the mountains, he turned around and he took me to Wiseman. And I'll never forget the day, because I landed almost on one side of the field there, and there was a fellow there, a big, heavy-set fellow, waiting for the mail plane to come in, of course, and he thought I was, or, you know, the plane that I was riding was the mail plane, so he came down there on the strip to wait for it. And, of course, when I landed, the pilot took all the my freight, you know, all my personal effects, and put it on the ground, and told me that I'd find some shelter here, that I better recuperate before I go up there into the mountains again, because it, you know, he figured I didn't have enough good sense to do that. But it was sort of interesting that when I landed, I put this one box, and of course this big magnum of whiskey was sitting there, and this fellow that was way on the other side of the strip there came running right over, and he looked at that bottle, and all of a sudden, you know, I was his long lost friend, you know, and he
sounds to me like something's brewing there, Paul. Suddenly a flask of whiskey and all these friends out there in the bush.
Well, that always happened that way, you know.
Had you struck it rich up to that time? Had you made a discovery before you got sick at all?
Well, there was, yeah, I located quite an extensive mm-hmm. deposit of lead, silver, antimony ore that was really interesting.
Well, I want to get back to this fellow that spotted that flask of whiskey in your belongings there in just a minute. But speaking of striking it rich, that's exactly what will happen if you travel out to 16-mile Chena Hot Springs Road and dine at Two Rivers Lodge. What an evening you'll have. An enchanting log structure with frontier decor, complete with a solarium overlooking a beautiful tree-bordered, possibly now frozen lake. What a pleasant setting for your dining pleasure. If you enjoy exciting new tastes, the menu alone will be enchanting. Their appetizers include such delicacies as shrimp cocktail, stuffed mushroom caps, and of course, the one I enjoy, hot and spicy chicken. Give it a try, guarantee you'll love it. There's a complete list of main dishes, including veal plates and fresh seafood, chicken, and of course, we don't want to forget the pleasures of steaks. And for dessert, my favorite, grapefruit pie, a fluffy body with bits of grapefruit spread throughout to add a delightfully tangy taste. Drinks, they have anything you might want, and perhaps some you have never heard of. And don't forget Two Rivers Special Coconut Brownie. That's Two Rivers Lodge, located at 16-mile Chena Hot Springs Road. For reservations, phone 488-6815. Once again, the number is 488-6815. Tell Stasha and Don Jim sent you. Hector's Welding, located at 13-mile Richardson Highway, has been serving Alaska for 40 years. Their 14,400-square-foot shop is capable of handling the most demanding work quickly and efficiently. Listen to this list of services. They can replace dozer blade liners. They also rebuild loader buckets and ripper shanks. They do heavy equipment repairs and modifications, and mining equipment fabrication is their specialty, including sluice boxes, conveyors, feeders, grizzlies, Leslie's screening plants. They also fabricate specialized riffles and punch plate. They have a portable welding unit for fast on-site repairs. Hector's fully equipped fabrication shop is ready to serve you. Bring out your ideas and blueprints. It's a well-known fact that anywhere in the interior where the big jobs are done, men in the field depend on Hector's for proven, rapid, reliable work. Rush jobs are no problem. Remember, Hector's Welding has been getting the job done and done right for 40 years, and now an all-new service for the placer miners. Flocculants. Hector's is the gel log distributor. There's a free test kit available. Keep that in mind, placer miners. All you have to do is stop out at Hector's and pick up the kit. Remember, it's free. Wherever Alaska's miners are working, Hector's is the first name in gold recovery equipment. Located at 13 Mile Richardson Highway. Phone 488-6432. Well, Paul, tell us about what happened during the... By the way, let's tell our listening audience, we're here on Alaska Gold Trails, KFAR Radio, 660 on your radio dial, and we're talking today to Paul Borelka, and he's giving us some of the fascinating prospecting and mining stories that he's experienced here in the interior of Alaska today. So if you'd like to call Paul and talk to him for a minute or two, our number is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. Paul, tell us about that that culprit that was after your whiskey.
Well, of course, here it was. It was Joe Bailey. And, of course, I always wanted to meet him, and here I had my chance. In fact, I couldn't get away from him. He had a big bear hug on me. And, of course, he immediately grabbed that box that I had the whiskey in and the food, and, of course, I couldn't get it away from him. And he told me then I just had to come and stay at his cabin and spend the night time. And he says, well, then he sort of realized that I wasn't feeling well. He says, that would be the perfect place for me to stay. He says, he'd take care of me. And I know that the fact is that he was glad to have some company, a fellow prospector, and so on and so forth. So we marched over to his cabin, and of course, he made a meal for us, and I had a meal, and I was feeling pretty sick. But about that time, one of his neighbors, his name was Dirty Harry, came over, and he was a young man. You might call him a bushman at that time. He enjoyed living in the wilderness and having a wilderness experience, living on, shall we say, close to nature. And, of course, that's why they called him Dirty Harry. He forgot to take nature off of him once in a while, you know. But the thing about it was that Dirty Harry and Joe Bayless, it seems to me, partaked of my medication. In fact, evidently they needed medicating. And in fact, when the next day when I woke up, because I went to sleep right after that, I was feeling real bad with the flu. And I woke up in the morning, and here's Dirty Harry and Joe Bayless passed out. I mean, it took them 3 days to get over what they put away that night. And of course, that was my first introduction to Joe. And of course, I stayed there until I recuperated. It was quite a little length of time. In fact, it was all of 2 weeks. And Joe, of course, started telling me stories about Alaska and some of his experiences, which were just absolutely phenomenal. If I only had a tape recorder or wrote the book, but taped all his conversations and his stories, because he had a mind that could remember detail, as I told you before. And it was just incredible, literally incredible, his knowledge. But of course, he would embellish his stories quite a bit. And in fact, that's why he was never too popular. But the thing that was sort of interesting to me, that evidently he and Harry Leonard up there had sort of a war going on. And because Joe claimed that certain properties was here and his, and Leonard was saying that it was his. And they sort of had ill feelings between them. But Joe had a way of not endearing himself to a lot of people, because his personality. I mean, in fact, that's why they called him Joe Belly, you know, or Mr. Promoter. But the thing there is that he was a little bit lazy, and he would go out and take advantage of people if he had a chance to, in a good-natured sort of way. I don't know how to explain that. I mean, he didn't do it maliciously, but he could always justify himself for doing it. Now, there was a fellow there in Wiseman. In fact, we called him the Birdman because he had an interest of watching birds and studying nature. But his interest was primarily watching birds. But he had a fear of running out of wood. Mm-hmm. And he would always be collecting wood and stacking up around the trees for winter use, or, you know, or for, you know, his for a stove for cooking on it. But he was so energetic about it that just about all around Wiseman that you had these piles of wood. Well, Joe evidently figured that he would help him out because he worked so hard, and he was working so hard away from town stacking the wood, that Joe decided to clear some areas for him to stack more wood in. So he started using up some of his piles that were closer in. And of course, Joe took some over there, the wood over to Mrs. Jonas that was living there at the time. And of course, the Birdman didn't appreciate it. In fact, it got to the point where the Birdman was throwing rocks at Joe. And in fact, it was sort of difficult for me to come out of because the rocks would sometimes be flying in the air.
So that's a story of your stay, then.
Well, it's your recuperation. Part of it, anyway. You know?
Tell me something, Paul. Where did what was the price of gold about the 1900s? Is that about $16 an ounce, was it?
Well, I believe it was $17 an ounce, but most of the miners got about $12 an ounce.
Because of the impurities, right?
Right.
And then what, it jumped up to $35 an ounce? When was that?
Well, I believe it was 1935 when President Roosevelt raised the price of gold to sort of balance the money situation, because he felt that was one of the ways to get us out of the Depression.
Mm-hmm. Where did you sell gold in those? Who did you sell the gold to in those days?
Well, in those days, it was very difficult to sell gold. In fact, there wasn't the services like we have today, for instance, at Oxford Refinery, where you could just walk in and sell gold. But you had to sell gold to the government in those days.
And now you can, in 1974, I believe, President Ford took the requirements off of gold, and you could sell it openly to one another and on the market. And so you sell gold today to somebody like Oxford Assaying and Refining, is that right?
Right. Well, you know, it's about the only service that we have in town. There are a few others now, but he's the primarily one that because of his service.
Okay. One thing, you know, they have a hotline over there, and you can get the daily quotes over at Oxford, and I'm not too sure what'll happen if we use some of these buttons here, but let's see if we can dial up their hotline. Maybe we can get these buttons to work here. Let's see what their hotline number is, if we can find it. It's 452-7858. Something's happening, Paul. We might get a hotline.
Thank you for calling Oxford's Quoteline. Today is Friday, December 11th. Gold closed in New York at $497.10, up $4.80. Silver closed at $691, that's down 2 cents. Platinum finished at $510.60, up $5.90. Our business hours are from 9 to 5, Monday through Thursday, 9 to 4:30 on Fridays, and we are open noon to 5 on Saturdays until Christmas.
There you have it, folks, the price of the precious metals today. Oxford, of course, is located over there at 208 Wendell Street upstairs, and their phone number for information is 456-3967. I like doing that so well. Let me see if I can dial them up. I got just 1.5 minutes here, and if we can dial them up over there and see what they've got and what kind of services they have today for the gold seller or buyer. Is there anybody home?
Good afternoon, Oxford.
Hi, this is Jim on Alaska Gold Trails, KFAR. You're on the air. What do you got over there in terms of nice Christmas gifts for the people that are interested in investing in precious metals?
Just 1 second, please.
He must have a customer or something that he's working with.
Hello?
Ray.
Yes.
Hey, Ray, tell us a little bit about the precious coins. We got about 30 seconds here. You got some gold and silver coins over there?
Sure do. We've got, in gold, we've got American Eagles, got the Australian Nugget coin, Maple Leafs, Cougar Ants, gold ingots, full range of items. Silver, we have also the American Eagle coins, and also a full line of bullion, both in bar and coin form.
Well, thanks, Ray, and we'll see you next week.
Okay, thank you.
Bye, folks, till next week.
Reflecting on this week's summit, the consensus in Capitol Hill is the summit was a success. Earlier, President Reagan talked to a group of reporters from around the country. He told them that the INF Treaty marked the greatest arms reduction breakthrough since World War II. He said the next step is limiting long-range weapons, the ICBMs. The president told the reporters that Star Wars testing should no longer hold up work on a strategic arms agreement. He says that SDI testing no longer concerns the Soviets.
It resolves it. The very fact that we have agreed that we are going forward with whatever is necessary in the research and development without any regard to an interpretation of ABM.
And President Reagan's now planning to go to Moscow next summer sometime. As you know, Caspar Weinberger left the job of Secretary of Defense not long ago. On John McLaughlin's 101 program, Mr. Weinberger was asked to assess the summit.
I think the summit went well. I think the agreement that was signed is a good agreement. And I, as far as I gather, they had some good, useful preliminary discussions about the other issues.
And Weinberger says he's surprised the Soviets agreed to the verification terms in the new arms treaty. More news after this.
Help, I'm tired of shopping and time is running out.
Mom, there's still time to order from the Sears Christmas Wish Books and catalog shopping's a breeze.
The Sears catalog, great idea. But what about your dad?
Easy, there's travel, sports, and business gifts for guys.
Aunt Jean?
Try the thoughtful alternative. It's better than a gift certificate because it comes with its own booklet of gifts.